Hello, listeners. Kathy Lawless, Life Story Curator. I'm all about capturing and curating career and life stories as a meaningful way to celebrate a milestone moment like a big old birthday, anniversary, retirement, or graduation. And I'm at my best when curating photo books that move your memories from the basement or your phone or your computer to the coffee table, giving you and your family and friends access to these treasured memories for years to come. I also love curating and capturing life and career stories through this podcast series, How Did I Get Here? It's a series of interviews designed for people just starting out in their careers, people in transition or possibly feeling stuck, and giving them access to the stories of people who have been there, done that, so that they might be inspired with some new ideas or maybe just comforted knowing they're not alone, that everybody starts somewhere and everybody goes through times of transition and times when they feel stuck.
Today, I'm very excited to be interviewing TJ Hovell. Did I say that right?
You did. Yeah, that was great.
TJ Hovell, who is a sales executive and coach. And TJ and I met through our Strategic Connections group. And I think we've known each other for about a year now. So
yeah, I'm just, going on right about a year.
Right on a year. So I'm very excited to dive deeper into his story. We've spent some time together over that year at different group meetings and some one-on-ones, but we're going to pause for a moment to hear from a very happy Life Story Curator client.
I'm a client of Life Story Curator, and I reached out to Kathy to do my husband's 50th birthday book. And I chose to use Kathy because I've seen her work, and of course, I've known her for a long time, and I knew that the product would be way above a standard. I've done books myself, and I knew that she would do an exemplary job. The process working with Kathy is very organized, and we started off with interviewing me, coming up with a deeper analysis of who my husband is. And through that process, we came up with things I would never thought of on my own, with just her asking certain questions. It triggered memories and special things that really added a great deal of value when we went to put the book together. And I hadn't, again, I hadn't remembered all these things when I first talked to her about it. So having that interview was great. When my husband opened the book on his birthday, he was nervous, of course, at first, and then very excited and quite emotional. You know, that he's from New Zealand, and so having family represented from so far away in this book was really, really special. And I know that family and friends from afar were pleased to be able to be part of this process. And I couldn't have done, you know, half the job that Kathy did, particularly in the time frame. And it was just beautifully presented, and she captured him very well, and she helped me sort of narrow down the focus and the amount of photos, and it couldn't have been any better.
Well, anyway, TJ, let's start, if you would, with the icebreakers, which are: what part of the country or world did you grow up in, and what is your, where are you in the birth order of your family, and how do you think both those things shaped you as an individual?
Great questions. So, I am from an extremely small town in the very northeast corner of Colorado, a population of about 800 people, between 800 and 1,000, depending on how big you call the town. Still to this day has no stoplight. My parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents all went to the same high school. And before that, there wasn't a school out there. There was like a town, it was like a country school. So I am the fourth generation of Haxton, Colorado, the Fighting Bulldogs. Both of my parents graduated in 1967, and I graduated in class of 2001. So out there, there's a whole lot of farming, a whole lot of, what we call blue collar people that definitely work hard. They, they take pride in what they do. And it's a lot of times it's the same thing that their parents did or their grandparents did. They're taking over family farms. And then you get a lot of the, you know, the axillary stuff that supports the farm. So it's a big presence out there is agriculture. And I am the, to answer your second question, I am the youngest of three. And I think being the youngest is the best because, of course, I would think that. I don't know how to think any other way, but
Oh, any different? Yeah.
I have two older sisters and I got to watch them, go through life ahead of me. And I got, it's the ultimate position to be in when you can watch and see what works and what doesn't and how things help and what don't and what to do and what not to do. So I think being the third in the order was very helpful for me because I could just watch what worked for them and, try not to make the same mistakes.
Yeah. And maybe not push some of the same boundaries if you saw that that didn't work. So
Yeah.
what's the age difference in the three of you?
There's 3 years between each of us. So I'm 41, almost 42, and then 45 and 48.
Oh, okay. And when you grow up in a small town like that, I did as well. I was in Elizabeth, Colorado, but I think that's still bigger, and it was
Oh, it's
bigger
way
at the
bigger.
time,
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
than Haxton. So what did you do for fun? I'm guessing that you did a lot of stuff on either your farm or your ranch that then wasn't really for fun, but it was to survive, right? That was just your normal day-to-day chores.
Yeah, so there's a lot that goes on out there that most people would find really boring, but you have animals to feed, so you have to get up every day and feed them. And even on Christmas Day, I caught my dad plenty of times singing Christmas carols to the pigs that we were raising because they have to eat on Christmas and they don't know what it is, right? So there's a lot more routine stuff. And I coach in the what we call the big city now at a much bigger school, and our crowds that we draw aren't very big. And I compare that to when I was in school at Haxton, the crowds were gigantic because out there's really nothing else to do. There's the high school sports and athletics are big out there because that's the main draw. There isn't a movie theater. There wasn't a bar growing up. There's not a restaurant. There's not a lot of draw. So they really follow high school athletics. So my dad was my coach my whole life. He started coaching in the early 80s, and so he coached me my entire high school career. And so I grew up on a football field. I grew up on a basketball court. I grew up in a weight room. That was the big draw, and that was the biggest priority to people in a small town.
Yeah. And your sisters, did they play sports too?
Yep. Yeah. Sports was, that's the pretty much the only reason I stayed in high school was sports because I didn't really love high school, but I loved the sports and you had to go to school to play the sports. So that was the big driver for me. So
Yeah, and you had to get good grades probably to play the sport too. So it was a big.
I danced that line pretty well. I didn't do it very well
Oh.
as a freshman, but I definitely danced that line. I definitely didn't, looking back, spend as much focus on school as I probably should have. But that was the game that I played and the line that I danced. But I was definitely at every game, which is what I needed. So,
So you played it well.
yes.
Okay, shifting gears just a little bit. Are you an introvert or an extrovert or what they call now the ambivert, which is kind of in the middle?
I would say that I can do a bit of both. I'm pretty good at both. I've had a couple jobs where I spent all my time by myself and that didn't really work. So I think I need some of both. But after being around some actual true introverts, I'm not a true introvert. I couldn't do it all the time. I do need some social reaction, interaction, but I definitely can play both roles really well, but I get extroverted really fast around the right people. So, and that's what I enjoy about coaching is it puts me in, with a bunch of like-minded people and I get extroverted really quick.
Really quick, yeah. So you kind of you take on the characteristics of who you're around, maybe.
Yeah, I definitely can blend in with just about any environment. From working from home now, I spend a lot of time by myself and it works out really well. But I fit in whatever environment pretty well, that I'm in.
Okay. So on the fun meter scale of 1 to 5, 1 being a couch potato and 5 being the life of the party, where do you put yourself?
A 4.5 probably. I can't remember the last time. Probably some of this is because we have a 2-year-old, but I can't remember the last time that my wife and I sat down and watched television. Most of the time, it doesn't even come on unless there's a football game or a basketball game. So I don't even remember the last time we sat down and watched a TV show together. So
So the word couch is not really even in your vocabulary, it sounds like.
we have one. I can definitely tell you we have a couch. I take a nap on it occasionally, but I don't turn the television on very often.
Oh, okay. Now on the risk meter, same scale, 1 to 5, 1 being low risk taker, 5 being a high risk taker, where do you put yourself?
5.5.
Yeah, I would say I think you're way over the scale on that, right?
I I wouldn't say I can't say that I'm not afraid to take risks, but I'm also I'm a very much a big believer of the fear. Have you heard of the philosophy of failing very fast, fail fast? I'm a big fail fast kind of guy, and I surprise people, especially when I interviewed for the job that I have now, that I told them that I like to fail quickly, and I don't think you're supposed to say that in an interview, but that's just the philosophy that I have. I'm gonna get as much information as I need, and I'm gonna go start, making some plays and taking some risks, some, calculated risks, hopefully. And then I learn really quickly. So I'm a big believer on that. But to get in that mindset, you have to be willing to take some risk, and you have to be okay with the results either way.
Well, I'm better to know early. Is this going to be a good fit and it's worth sticking it out? And yeah, there's some failures, but I push through it, or this isn't a fit, so I'm out, right? I mean, you can figure that out pretty quickly.
I would say on your scale, I'm probably a 5 or a 5.5, but I love to fail fast and move on. So that has served me pretty well.
Okay. Well, I love these questions because as we get into your story, we'll see how they play out in real life. And a lot of times I will tell you, people who have given me these ratings, I push them over to the, I think you're more of a 7 or a 9, even, because they and really, we all have our own scales, right?
We do.
Okay, TJ, well, tell us what it's like to be a sales executive and a coach. So basically, what it's like to be here, and then we'll get into the here.
Absolutely. So, the previous 9 years of my life, I was at a high performance sports physical therapy clinic, which works really good for an extrovert, for the record, a new person to pick on every hour. And I'm a true believer that my gifts and all of the experience that I have in life lead me to be a really good coach. And I got to the point where at my last job, they told me that I couldn't coach. They had a hard line in the sand. They said it wasn't something that they thought fit here and didn't fit the time, and they didn't think that it could make it work. And I totally respect their decision. As wrong as I think it was at the time, I'm really glad that they said that, or I would have probably never made the moves that I made. So I started reaching out, and I talked to a bunch of people, and I network really well, and I make friends really quickly. And so I have a lot of friends from a variety of different roles. And I had a buddy. We were having a drink one night, and he told me that he had met somebody that was looking for somebody that might fit what I'm looking for. And if I wanted an intro, I was in front of her name is Amanda. I work for her now. I was in front of her 48 hours later. We had two interviews. She never even looked at my resume. And she took a chance on me, and I work in, I took a complete left turn to go from, sports physical therapy and being a complete meathead to working in sales, selling technology. And I had an interview with the CTLF people when I joined the crew, and they was like, well, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I was like, guys, I didn't see myself here, so I don't even know what the next 6 months looks like. I didn't think I'd be here. I didn't think I'd be a guy from the country wearing cowboy boots selling custom tech. So, it's kind of a fun left turn. I didn't really know what I was getting into, but I was very open with Amanda, and I told her that I wanted to coach, and I told her she could feel how passionate I was about it, how it's been ingrained in me since I can remember. And her dad was her coach, and so she understood that connection, and she's like, absolutely, we'll make that work, whatever you need. And so she's been very supportive of that. So it's worked out really well. I changed my career completely to be able to, one, spend more time at home. We have a at the time he was about a year. He's about 2 years now. So I wanted to spend more time with him, and I wanted to get back into coaching, both of which I was able to do.
Well, that's such a great example of finding the right role, the right culture, and the right fit for all of these talents and skills. And it didn't have to do anything with your experience, right? Or anything with this
No.
resume, but it was that you can really be transferable with all these skills and talents and make it work, and make it work for your life. And when it works for your life, then you want to make it work, right?
The previous job that I was at, they loved hiring athletes because athletes understand, how to carry over hard work from one sport to the other, and they can typically carry that over from life to a sport and back and forth. Amanda told me that the first time we talked, is she loved hiring athletes because they understand that skills are transferable, and you just take your hard work and your program and your discipline, and you take it from applying it down one path and you apply it to the new path, and it usually works out pretty well. So, she definitely understands the mindset and the mentality of somebody like myself.
Yeah, and in sports you can't not have the discipline and the skills and finding out what's going to work for you. So very cool. Well, very cool. Okay, well, so you took the big left turn, so I'm guessing this isn't what you thought you were going to be when you were in junior high and high school. So let's go back to small town, junior high and high school. What did you think you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, when I was really young, there was no doubt in my mind I was going to be a professional football player. I didn't even think there was even a second option. And then, I got into high school and, basically what I really wanted, was to live in a small town and be a coach and, be a part of a big dynasty. That's what my dad did. He coached for 24 years. They played in like 9 state championship games. They won 7 of those 9. It was a big deal. It drove my life to this point. And I thought that's where I was headed. I thought I was going to live in Haxton like everybody else in my family has. And I thought I was going to be a coach. And that was for a good 15 years. There was never a doubt that that was going to be what was going to happen. That's definitely something I've tried to take versions and bits of that and bring it into my current situation, which I think I'm doing pretty well right now.
Okay. So then as you were in junior high and high school, then were you thinking, do I need to go to college to play these sports and also be a coach? I mean, so was that the plan?
Yeah, as I told you before, I was not cut out for school. I
Yeah.
don't have the attention span for it. And I usually found myself getting in more trouble. I tried a little bit of walking on with some football and at college, and that didn't really work. And I tried several versions of college, and I just really didn't have as much of a good experience. I finished with a degree, but I didn't love it. I was ready to get into the work field immediately. I felt like that was something that I was much more suited for than the college life and the getting the degree and chasing that whole mindset.
Yeah, just like we in our meeting this week at Strategic Connections, right? We were talking about what is the value, or what these days, what is the value versus the cost of getting that 4-year degree. And in some industries, it's a requirement, and some it's not. So what was your degree in, if you don't mind me asking?
I have a degree in business. We'll get to it because this is your show. But my first one is in business, and that has a
Your
minor in
first one,
finance.
oh.
We'll get to that part of the story. This is how you. I hope you got your afternoon, blocked off because that's a long story.
Long journey, okay.
Yeah, no, my first degree was in business, with a focus in finance. So that was the first time I graduated. And then when I did that, I started my own, I ran my own company. It was a trucking, like a logistics commodities list, logistics and trading company. So I had semi on the road and ran my own business for almost 8 years.
So how do you go from just having a business degree to then running your own business? Did you have a family member or someone that got you into that? I mean, that's a pretty big
Yeah.
leap.
Yeah, it you know, when you're again, when you grow up in the country, you understand that things operate differently and you don't you you know that the food at the store that the grocery store just doesn't show up there and there has to be a chain how to get there and how does that stuff get there and how do you supply that? And feedlots are a big part of the food supply chain and it's a big part of where I'm from. So that was just a part of growing up. I'd been on a feedlot, I've worked on one, so once you understand how that stuff all works, understanding how to get supplies to them is more simple than it sounds.
Yeah. So you get the business degree. Do you feel like it helped you then when you went into, starting this business? Or do you feel like you already kind of knew so much, maybe the business degree really just, kind of put the a lot language and framework around something you already knew so well?
Yeah, I would say the second part. I mean, obviously, the more accounting that you know and the way that you understand how money works is never a bad thing. I think that I probably would have gotten to the same end with or without a degree, especially in that world. I don't know that it really helped me out, but now all of the business stuff that I learned, I use to help other people in the role that I'm in now. You never know what you're learning now and where you're going to use it. And right now, in the world that I operate in software, I have to spend a lot of time helping people with their business because what we're trying to build is a big part of their business world. And so now I use my business degree way more now than I ever did when I had my own business. And I know that sounds crazy, but it's very true.
Yeah. So you had your business, what did you say, 8 or 9 years? What then happened? What Did you decide to sell it or?
Aggressively sold it. Is that something everyone has ever told you before? I aggressively sold it. In 2013, I had the most aggressive life change that you can probably imagine. And that might be a little narcissistic when I say it that way, but in the span of about 6 weeks, I changed just about everything you can change in your life, without the exception of my parents were with me, throughout the whole thing. I still had my family, but everything else has changed. I can't impress upon you enough how much changed in 6 weeks. So I aggressively changed everything, and started over. So that was left turn probably like four, but that's like three turns ago. So that's just part of the journey at this point. That's where I lost all my hair too. So
Oh, okay. So we're trying to keep track of all these terms. So, because I'm, this podcast is for people who are in transition or feeling stuck. What happened? Were you feeling stuck? Did you just, reach a point where you're like, this is not me? Or what was kind of that aha moment that
yeah, you know,
got
I
you?
as I told you, I feel like my gifts are definitely geared towards helping people. And, I think the best part of being, a coach for me is being part of something bigger than myself. And the role that I was in, I was making pretty good money. I was doing my thing and I had some flexibility, but I wasn't using any of my gifts. I was sitting in a semi by myself all day, every day. I just got to the point where I absolutely hated it. And then you throw in a there's always the factor of I got divorced at the same time, so I had to start over. So you throw in a big life change with like a divorce, with a company change, a career change. I moved, I sold my house, sold my business, sold my car, moved, went back to school. I couch surfed for a year and a half while I did all that, so I didn't have to pay a whole lot of rent. I worked three or four different odd jobs at a time. All to go back to school and get my degree in physical therapy, which I bet you didn't see coming.
A little bit. So, where did you move to then? So if you were in the semi, I mean, you were over the road a ton, or was it over the road in your community?
I was home every night most of the time, but it was working 18-hour days, 100-hour weeks pretty often. When I was coaching at the same time, I was coaching basketball even way back when. I started that in like 2008, somewhere in there, 2008, 2009. So, I was coaching way back then. I was working 100 hours a week and trying to coach, and that's not real conducive for a lot of things. I definitely found out where my limits were. So yeah, I was living out there. And then I aggressively made a career path change, a life path change, everything change. And I moved to the big city. I got a degree in physical therapy here in Denver, and I worked a bunch of jobs and got a bunch of experience down that path because, again, we were coming back to this. I want to be a really good coach, and I figured at the time, I was at the point in my life where I could do whatever I wanted, probably for the first time that I could remember. And I wanted to go be a better coach. And so I figured if I want to be a better coach, I better understand, exercise and recovery and healing and surgery and all of those things better to make myself a better coach down the road. So I went back to school for physical therapy I showed up day one, and they talk a lot about, oh, you can work in a hospital and you can do all of these different settings. And I said, I'm here for sports and everything else I don't have time for. So I'm telling you right now, I'm only working in sports. I will never work in anything else. So don't waste my time with that, because as you know, I'm not very good at school. So I told them exactly what I wanted, and that's what I did. I went and worked at the best sports performance recovery center in the entire state, and I was there 9 years, and I learned as much as I can that will make me a better coach. It already has this year, make me a better coach for the next part of my career.
So how long does physical did that take? So that would is that a master's degree then, since you already had the undergrad? Is that how that
It
worked or?
is a doctorate, but there is a version called the physical therapist assistant, which is a PTA. It's a 2-year program, so it's an associate's degree. It was the fastest. I couldn't afford to go back and get another undergrad degree to get a grad degree. I was 31 at the time, and the math on that doesn't really work, because to your previous point, at 31, I did the math on that, and I was like, well, I'm going to go spend another 150 grand, and I'm not going to be done until I'm 36. And I don't know if I'm ever going to pay that off with what a PT makes, right? So I went the fastest, easiest, cheapest way I could do that, which was a PTA. And that got me working within 2 years.
It got you to your goal. Yeah.
It did,
Yeah.
and it was, I paid off most of it while I was doing it. I didn't have to take out a bunch of student loans. It was way more cost efficient, and it ultimately he got me there 5 years sooner, which is huge. So
Yeah.
I used my business degree to figure out which degree I wanted. There you go. How's that? I bet you haven't had that conversation a whole lot.
That's true. I used my business degree to figure out my next degree. And it sounds like you chose wisely. Okay, so then you get into the PT, and I'm guessing when you get in, you're loving it, right? Because then now you're doing the thing you want to be doing, and it's in a sports field. I mean, it seems like that would be such a great fit for you.
It was an amazing fit. And there was a good 3 or 4 year span where I didn't think I would ever leave. And I thought that was it, right? Which famous last words. I thought that was it. I thought that the journey had stopped. And then, I never could get over the call of wanting to coach and wanting to, spend more time with my family. Part of that was I was commuting, an hour and a half a day. Not quite an hour and a half, but pretty close, so that was a big part of it. It was a big haul up there. There was a good amount of time I thought that was the end of the journey, but I should probably know myself better to know that that's never the end of the journey. But and then I wanted to get back into coaching, like I said, in a world where you have to be with a patient every hour to make money, it's very limiting on what you can do and how flexible your schedule can be.
Yeah, that's true. That everything is contingent on, like that FaceTime thing, right? So you can't. Oh,
And
yeah.
there's no way to scale it, and there's no way to really change it, right? So I basically got to the end of the rope because I knew there was nowhere for me to go without making another drastic big change. Now, this time I didn't make it as aggressively, or my wife probably, probably I'd probably been sleeping on somebody else's couch, but so we spent a lot of time and a lot of thought. It was well thought out, and then the last pieces just all fell into the place at the right time. I got the right job at the right time, the right job offer at the right time that had enough flexibility. We adopted a baby, and he was about one, and I was to the point where I was like, I'm never going to get to spend any time with this kid if I keep doing what I'm doing. I'm going to have to make some changes, and he's the only kid that we're going to have, and I don't want to wish that I don't want to wish that I had. I would rather take a risk and change it, burn everything down again, and start over, and we'll figure it out on the other side.
Yeah. Well, talk about then how you ended up moving then to Highlands Ranch. So that to me seems like a pretty big mindset shift. Not only you're doing the PT, but now you're in suburbia, you're not small town, but then how you got into the coaching that you're doing now. It seems like there was a, the career's working out, but there's still that unmet passion or unsatisfied passion that you were looking for.
I met my wife, and she lived in Highlands Ranch. And if it's a binary where you like living in the country and all of the city is the exact same, it didn't matter to where we were going to live. She already lived in Highlands Ranch, and I like I like Douglas County a lot, and I like that there's a lot to like about Highlands Ranch. They have amazing rec centers, so it's a good fit. Highlands Ranch is definitely not my style, I can tell you that much, but it works out really well for right now. So when I met my wife, we got married, and then we bought a house in Highlands Ranch because it was close to the job that she was at. And I would rather me drive way further than her have to drive. So we moved to Highlands Ranch, and well, we stayed in Highlands Ranch because I didn't want her to have to drive.
Ah, okay, yeah, but if it was up to you, you'd probably prefer more acres. Is that the
Yeah, it's weird. I step out on my back porch and I can count like 14 houses that I can see into, and it just drives me up a wall. We grew up with, you could do, you live out in the middle of nowhere. It's a lot different feel, and it's just, we live on a postage stamp, and I'm surrounded by other postage stamps, and that's just not my style for the long term. But it's, I got no complaints. We have access to everything, and we have so many opportunities here. I've got no complaints, but it's definitely not my style.
Yeah. Well, sometimes those are the things we don't want to say sacrifice, but you kind of look at, I've always heard that term, I either live by my work or I live by my friends. I make these choices about what's going to work for my life based on what's going to be easier at some point. So
Yeah, no, it sacrifice is a good word, Kathy. That's the way it is, right? I sacrifice a lot of the stuff that I like for the opportunities and the things that the city brings, and that's a pretty binary, in my mind, that's a pretty binary choice that I've made, and definitely something that my wife and I have talked about, but it's definitely a choice that we made.
yeah. I remember we grew up in Elizabeth, as I mentioned, very small town. And that when we got into high school, my mom's first thought was, where do we get jobs? There's no jobs out here. And so then we moved to the big town of Castle Rock. And but you know what? There was jobs there. There was a Burger King, there's a Dairy Queen. You know, there's opportunities for young people to get jobs. And so that made a big difference versus if we are in Elizabeth, I don't, what would we have done? We'd had to drive that far. Which then that can be, you know, sometimes dangerous, right? That you're driving so far, maybe early morning, late night, or whatever. So, but yeah, that is a sacrifice that sometimes in the smaller towns you get a certain benefit, but then there's a certain thing that there just aren't the jobs and the opportunities that there are in a big city.
No doubt.
So, tell us then. So you, how did you get this latest coaching job? Because I know you are super jazzed. You guys are state bound, you're making the charge. So how did you land there? Was there some other coaching jobs that led up to this one?
Yes and no. When I first got married, my wife understood how much I wanted to coach, so I got into some competitive eighth grade coaching, which it definitely did not scratch the itch. It wasn't what I wanted, but it was what I could do at the time. And the good news, looking back, is it let me meet a lot of people. One of the guys that I view as my mentor since I moved to the city has a lot of connections, and he was able to, once I told him that I was ready to leave next level, he just said, "Where do you want to go? Who do you want me to who do you want to talk to?" And I was like, "Well, I just want a really good fit, and I want to be a part of a really good program." And so he made two phone calls, and I interviewed with two programs, and I eventually picked one. So it was a connection based off of some of the previous work that I'd done and some of the people that I knew. I interviewed with them, and I came in with a lot of experience and definitely a different mindset and a different mentality than they had, and they definitely appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times it ends up being a parent of a kid that ends up being the coach. So to really have a purposeful, we're going to go out and do a search and hire and find someone, sounds like this is a pretty sophisticated program, huh?
It is, and it's one of those things where you are correct. I think that I think the statistics, especially in the junior high level, is it's 95% plus that the coaches are always parents. So when I came in, and I wanted to coach kids, and I didn't even have a kid at the time, I was very much an anomaly, which I was totally fine with. I learned so much, and like I said, it made a lot of connections, and it worked out really well in the end for what I wanted to do and where I'm at that now.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like, you know, if I'm a parent in the community and I'm a kiddo, I kind of like that because then I think, well, the coach hasn't got a favorite immediately because they don't have a kid on the
And
on the team.
they know for sure that I am there because I want to be there, and I'm not there because of my kid, right? So it's a different, like I said, it's a whole different mentality of coming in without an interest. I didn't know anybody at that school when I interviewed, and I come in completely fresh off the street, and it's a different mindset and a different mentality because of that.
Yeah. Well, and they're looking at, wow, he must have a lot of skills. A lot of times the parent, you're like, have you even coached this sport?
Yeah. Well, I do get asked a lot. I don't really look like a basketball player or coach. I definitely my body style is definitely more of the football approach. But so a lot of people are like, "Are you sure you're in the right sport? You look like a football player." And I'm like, "Well, I was, but I coach basketball." They're like, "Well, you look like you still play football." And I'm like, "Well, I compete in strongman, so I lift a lot, but I like basketball, so I definitely get that a lot." So,
Yeah, because I could also see you as the wrestling coach,
yeah.
you know, or or the trainer, right? As the weightlifter, as you just mentioned. So okay, people, we're only going to publish the audio on this, so people don't get a chance to see you, but I do ask for some pictures, so they'll see you through some pictures. They just won't see the video. So,
Gotcha.
I love this notion of you have a life that works for you. You have a career that's earning you a certain income that allows you then to do the things that give you a lot of passion. You know, sometimes you get to that point in life where it's like, how do I find that portfolio career that does all those things for me, right? So that I'm just not 100% one company, big job kind of thing. So, I mean, It sounds like you were somewhat purposeful in creating that for yourself.
If we're being real honest, I try to be pearl purposeful about everything I do, right? It's all a piece of the puzzle, and my mom can tell you I've been hustling basically. I'm always working an angle on somebody at all times, and I have been since I was like 8. So those pieces didn't just accidentally fall in, they were definitely, we put a lot of thought in to set up, the life that we wanted with the things that I really want to do and the opportunities that I've been exposed to. So it was very well thought out. And I also run a personal coaching company as well. And I have a gym in my garage, so I train some people as well. So I do a lot of stuff, and that's just where I'm in my best, is when I'm juggling a lot of things and trying to move them all down the court at the same time. So that lets me bring in my passion for coaching outside of basketball as well. And I've got some clients that have had some amazing success. I have one guy, he's down 100 pounds, and he's competed in his first powerlifting meet, and he's doing really well. And I've got a garage that I have 4 or 5 people come over on the weekends, and we train together, and I compete in strongman, and a couple of my guys do as well. So it lets me combine all the passions that I have and all the things that I want to do, and move them all down at the same, and to my wife, sometimes she thinks I'm crazy and I spend too much time doing that, but I sure enjoy it.
And how does she feel about, does she get a park in the garage? I mean,
No,
or is the
that's,
whole garage a gym?
why did you have to go there? So they
Sorry, I
that, that. So when we started this, I told her that she would always be able to park in the garage, and she still technically can. It just takes me a little while to move some stuff out of the way, but she still technically can. So I'm technically not wrong yet, but I'm awful dang close. So I
Oh,
lost
okay.
my parking spot a long time ago, she can, we can do it, but it's not without me arm wrestling a bunch of equipment out of the way.
Yeah. Now, does she share your passion for lifting? Is she out there lifting with you too?
Yeah, she trains probably at least as much or probably more often than I do in the garage. So that's a huge part of our lives together, and a huge reason that we got together, and something that we definitely share. So she uses a lot of the stuff a little differently, and a little bit less of it, but she loves the garage gym as much as I do.
Okay, so that's probably why she's not maybe as loud as she could be about the parking situation. So now,
Yeah, she
does she compete like you do?
No,
Is
she doesn't. She just does it because she loves to work out, and she likes to stay active. She's also a physical therapist, and so she understands the importance of staying strong and moving as you age, and all the and bottom line is she just likes to move. So I think she enjoys the garage for a bunch of different reasons as well. So.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, I love working out too. So does my husband. And that has been such a core component of our life. And I think, and the, one of the success factors of our marriage is because that's such a common value, of our, of who we are as people. Because if one wasn't and one was, it's hard to stay. It's
Yep.
hard not to want them to do more, right? Because you do feel so good when you're done. Yeah, I've never left the gym and thought, I wish I'd just stayed on the couch, right? You always leave going, I feel so great.
Yeah, no, that was a big part of the, when I first met my wife, that was a big hurdle that we had, that I definitely made us both jump over very quickly, is if she was going to be into the gym or not, because it wasn't going to work for me to be with anybody that wasn't ready to spend a bunch of time in a gym, or like you said, be on the shared similar path. And that's one of the things I love the most about my wife, is that we're on that same path together, and it works out really well. We, when we had a we got it, we adopted our son, our lives obviously got flipped up on side, on top of their heads. And so, but the one thing that we always, we made a promise to each other that we would always help each other out, get their workouts in. And so that never stopped at all. Nothing else happened, but we always made sure that we got the workouts in, and we, supported each other in that.
Yeah. And I know you get up what at 4? So
Yeah,
you've
but
just
it
given up
just depends.
sleep is what it sounds like.
We go to, our little dude goes to bed at 8, and I'm in bed at like 8:05. So, just that's when I have to go to sleep to get up and get ready to work out. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, TJ, I could probably keep going with a bunch of questions, but we probably should start wrapping up. And these last questions always then lead to some really good juice as well. So if you would tell us. What do you think served you best as you look back on your career and your life and where you are today? And that can be a discipline, a characteristic, or maybe a habit. What do you think served you best?
I would say two things. Number one, the hard work that I got, growing up on a farm and understanding a whole lot more to how the world works and what it takes to be successful and stuff that my parents went out of their way to teach me about hard work and what that looks like, and how you have to put in a whole lot more hard work with no results being seen for a long time before they start showing up, and all the things that go into building something like that, as I told you previously, is transferable from career to career and job to job and other parts and areas, aspects of your life. Once you understand, what it's going to take and where, if you can understand where you want to be and do some backwards math and figure out what it takes to get there, it makes the equation look a whole lot easier and a whole lot more achievable. So I think, hard work, and understand that goes along with discipline, getting up every day to work out, even when I don't want to, even when, our son was up, for most of the night and I'm running on a few hours of sleep, I'm still going to get up and work out. It doesn't matter. It's not even negotiable. So, hard work and discipline go hand in hand. And then, the last thing that my mentor, since I moved to the city, really impressed upon me is he's like, if, you're down a path and you know what the end looks like, you're probably on the wrong path. He's like, you're going to take a big chance and you're going to leave your career and you're going to go try something new. And that's pretty scary. And a lot of people never do that because they're too afraid of what could happen. And, and obviously that's a big part of it, but I was afraid of what I knew would happen if I stayed where I was, and I wasn't okay with that. So I had to make a change, right? So if you want something different, you have to do things differently or you'll get the same results you've always gotten. So, that's kind of the way that I viewed it. And that's what pushed me to find more for my family and for myself.
Yeah. I love what you said about working hard and the discipline, and you don't see immediate results necessarily. In this world where we're such instant gratification of what, I need to know something. Oh, just Google it. Or I want this and I want that. Or I can order through Amazon. It could be here this afternoon. Are you kidding me? When did we get into that, world where it has to be here today? But we do tend to have that expectation, right? Is that everything should be when we want it, but you got to work for it.
Yeah, and that's definitely something that we see all the time. Like I said, I counsel people with weight loss or weight gain, right? So some people want to put on a lot of muscle, which is definitely something that I'm really good at. And I tell people we need to think about not only your 3 month program, but your 3 year program and what your 6 year program looks like, because, this is going to take some time and you're going to spend 6 months working your ass off to largely see the exact same thing before that scale really starts moving one way or the other, right? You can have some quick wins, but quick wins lead to quicker losses, right? So we want the slow, steady progress, and you got to put in a lot of work. You got to see not a lot of results for a long time. And then they start showing up after you've put in a bunch of work. It's so front loaded that most people never see the results because they just get off the train or they don't let the program work itself long enough for them to see what they need.
Yeah, which then goes back to you started with the junior high program, even though you're like, this isn't exactly where I want to be, but it's the foot in the door, and I'll work hard here, prove myself, learn a lot, right? Make some great contacts, and then look at the contacts that you made, and then 48 hours, you have a job. Once you make that decision, it really turned around. The other thing I want to comment on is your point about if you know what the end looks like, then maybe you're not in the right place. So that's interesting.
And well, and I got my last career. I knew exactly if I didn't make a change, I knew what 10 years from now, I knew how much money I was going to be making. I knew how many miles I was going to be driving in the car. I knew exactly what the end looked like. And for some people, that's exactly what they want and exactly where they want to be. And they're like, oh, that's great. I don't have to think about it. I know exactly what's coming. And that terrifies me. It got to the point where I don't want that. And if I don't change something, that is what is coming. So I gave myself no option other than I had to figure something else out. I had to make a move and I had to make a change. Or I was going to get exactly what was coming, which is not what I wanted. And some fair enough. If some people want that, that's fantastic. That ain't me. So, it wasn't going to give me what I wanted. It wasn't going to give me what I wanted for my family. So I didn't have a choice.
Yeah. Well, I'm back to being that risk taker and but someone who's so driven and disciplined. I can see how you're like I want more, and then I don't know what that looks like. But you know, as a sales executive, every day's got to be different, right? And every
Yes.
job, every prospect, every person you go talk to, because it's a customized product that you're selling. I mean, yeah, I can see how now, there's no way you could predict.
No, and you know, our owner likes to say nobody knows how to buy what we sell. So I have to overcome that every single call. And then I have to spend a lot of time understanding their business. And sometimes I have to give them a bunch of advice on how to make their business grow big enough so they can afford what I sell. So, you know, like I said, I use my business degree a lot because sometimes I have to grow my prospects in order for them to be able to afford or need the product that I sell. So, you know, it's one of those things where I think if you're a real passive individual, I don't think this would work. But if you're a pretty active dude and you know how to, you know, network with people, you know, there's no end to the amount of impact that I can have on people, whether they buy my product or not. And I tell them all the time, we may not be a good fit, but I'm gonna still help you because I'm a big believer in, you know, putting good stuff out there. And eventually that will come back one way or the other. And, you know, things always happen in the exact same, even if sometimes we don't want it to be the timing, but it always happens in the exact right timing in the end. And typically you can look back and see why it didn't happen when you wanted it to the first time. So, you know, I help as many people as I can. And that's no joke. You know, I'm not selling you anything right now. So I can tell you that this is true. I help as many people as I can because that always comes back in one form or the other. And, you know, you do enough good things for enough people, eventually you're going to have some good stuff come your way.
Well, and those I think are the most successful people in sales, are the ones who are there to help people, to
Yeah.
listen. What is the solution you're really looking for? And your ability to say, I can walk away. I'm not here to sell you something. If this
Yeah.
isn't a fit, let's figure it out together. But I think it's a fit, and here's why. And then you can keep going down that path. Plus, you've got this mindset of it's you're in it for the long-term play. You're not in it for we got to score this week. Here's my quota, right? I mean, that's a tougher sell. So,
Yeah.
okay, well, last question then. Any words of wisdom that impacted you maybe when you were aggressively changing your life or making big transitions or time when you felt stuck? Any words of wisdom that really got you moving forward?
The answer to that is how much time you have, right? But
And it can be more than fun. I mean, I get it. I get it.
if I'm you know, I just think you know, gosh, that's a tough one. I think as cheesy as it's gonna sound, now I'm not selling anything and I'm not writing fortune cookies right now, but if you can really understand yourself and understand what drives you both good and bad, and you can understand what it is that you actually want, not that what you think it is that you want, but what you actually want to do with your life. You know, you can make the decisions and move down the path that you want, whether it's, you know, a little bit per day or jump gigantic, aggressive life changes like I did. You know, as long as you're always moving towards what you want and what you actually want to be, most people spend most of their lives thinking that they need to do stuff to impress other people and they never actually figure out what it is that they want. I think that's the hard part is understanding what it is that you actually want and where do you want to actually be. And then you just, you know, figure out a way to work the backwards math to figure out how to get there. What do I have to learn? What skills do I have to acquire? Who do I have to meet? What experiences do I need to glean to be able to get there? And eventually, if you work on that path long enough and you work on you, you're going to end up where you exactly where you spend all your time, effort, and energy aiming for, right? So I think most people don't know what to aim for. And then if they do, they never aim for it. But I think if you do, you can end up exactly where you want to be, or you know, be on the path towards where you want to be and end up, you know, selling custom tech and cowboy boots in meetings that I sometimes don't even know that I'm qualified to be there. So, you know, it's one of those things where you don't know what the destination is if you don't know, you know, you don't work towards getting there.
Well, and it's so freeing. I remember when I was, looking for that next opportunity. I had a, long corporate career at one company, 20 years, thought I knew what the path was. Leave. Then in my head, you're absolutely right, TJ. I was in this mode of this is what I think the next job should be for me and what it needed to look like and how I needed to be moving up and to the right, how they talk about, just keep moving up in responsibility. And I had this external view of what I should. And so I was shooting on myself. So then I was all over the board. When I really settled down, and it was very hard to do, by the way, what did I really want? Then as soon as I did that and I declared it, the next thing I know, I'm moving forward. I'm, I, you, you know, the thing you get in action, And it just starts to all fall in place. It's amazing. Once you really get out of that weird little, place where, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do.
Yeah, it's you asked me if I watch a lot of television, and I don't, but I read a lot, right? So it's one of those, if you make 1% progress towards your goal every day, then in 2 years you've made a lot of progress, right? But you have to know what that goal is, and you have to have a concerted effort to work towards that. And I didn't know, I knew what the end looked like, but I had no idea. And I'm not saying that this is the end. I knew what this part of my life looked like, but I had no idea what the journey that to get there was going to look like. But I worked hard. I learned as much as I could. I said yes to way too many things, and now that I have to say no to a lot of stuff because I don't have time. But I said yes to a lot of experiences. I grew as much as I could, and I used all that to push, my path in the position and the direction that I wanted. And some days you make 1%. Sometimes you have a step back of about 3%, but sometimes you make gigantic progress. And as long as you're, working towards the same thing all the time, to your point, you're going to go up and to the right a lot. So, it's one of those things where you got to take the good and the bad, but you still have to have a vision in mind. And I knew from the time I was 9 or 10 that I was always going to be a coach, and I didn't know what that was going to look like, but I was always headed down that path. And, I made a lot of changes, and I got a lot of experiences, and I did a lot of things to get to the point where I'm at to be a better coach. And, I knew that was the vision the whole time.
Yeah. Well, and I look forward to see what's next. It seems like one of the interviewers or interviewees from, I don't know, she's maybe interview 100 or 90 or something like that. Anyway, she said that, people have kind of a, or she said executives have a shelf life. And sometimes it's a self-imposed shelf life, or sometimes the company might impose a shelf life on you. And so, and hers was 5 years. And I had another boss, hers was like a year and a half. And, sometimes it's 7 years. There's a whole brain thing that's about a 7-year itch and all of that. So, now that you've kind of achieved this thing right now, you're really at the top of your game in a lot of ways, right? At your company, as a coach, with all your training. It'll be interesting to see, well, what does 5 years down the road, 7 years look like? Sounds like you can't predict it, which is what you want.
Yeah,
And so
not
new
very
doors are
much.
going to open, and where are you going to go? How fun.
And I'm gonna, now the vision changes, and now we want to, continue to grow. And it's, again, I'm not sounding like a fortune cookie, but I think most people, they don't aim high enough and hit. They don't. A lot of people shoot for the stars and miss, right? But you're still ending up way higher. And a lot of people aim really low and then they hit it, and that's a problem. So, as I get close to a goal, I always change it and I set a new one. So I never really achieve it, but that always keeps me pushing down the road of where I want to be.
Yeah. Well, very cool. Well, TJ, thank you so much for sharing today. This has been really interesting. I love how there's been such a they call this now the portfolio career, where you've got all of these different things, but I would call it a portfolio passion career, because
Yeah.
you are it's more than just you have a variety of things that are earning you a living, but they're serving you in so many ways that it's just feeding your soul as well as your pocketbook, I guess I would say.
Yep,
So
absolutely. And it's all got to make sense, and it's all got to come together. And it definitely, I'm not saying it's perfect, and I'm by far, far from being done, but so far it's worked, the path has worked out pretty well.
okay, well, I applaud you for everything that you've tried, and I guess I go back to your 5.5 rating, and I am going to take you up to like a 7.9. I'll take you up there. So I
My
do like to post your social media. I'm assuming you're on social media with your strongman competition and with your training, your coaching. That's probably a limited community somewhat, but I guess people could go to some of that. But if you've got
yeah
social media stuff.
yeah my I'm on Instagram and Facebook. It's all TJ Hovel, same thing, just like shovel without the S, Hovel, TJ Hovel. That's where all my stuff is. So we're getting ready for our first round of the playoffs are tonight for basketball, and I'm also prepping for the Strongman National Championships in a few months that I'm competing in. So there's no lack of things going on at my house for sure.
Yeah. Well, and both of those events are going to be in Colorado, right? The obviously
Yeah.
the state basketball is here, but then the strongman is in Colorado. That's something I didn't know was in Colorado.
Well, it moves around. It's in Colorado this year. It's being hosted here. It's never been in Colorado before, so this is the first time.
Awesome. Okay. Well, listeners, if you like today's podcast and interview, please subscribe below so that you can be alerted of new interviews as they're published. I will be posting this interview on my website, lifestorycurator.com, and this is where I'll post TJ's social media and information as well about these competitions coming up, so you can see those. The state basketball, obviously, we might miss that based on when I publish this, but the strongman one is this summer, right? So we can probably get in front of that. So
it's in June.
Ah, okay. Well, on that note, I will say stay safe, stay well, and let's keep sharing those stories. Have a great day.